interviewing you?
Yeah.
Can we do it now?
Sure.
Great. I appreciate this. Let me say that first. And one of the side effects I need to tell people before we start, for a period of 2 or 3 weeks after the interview appears in the magazine, you'll get a big increase in the number of autograph requests. Is that a problem?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. One fellow told me he got over 100 shortly after his interview appeared. I don't know if they all get that kind or not, but I do know there's a big increase.
Magazine, is it?
It's a baseball card magazine called Sports Collector's Digest. It's mainly geared to people who collect sports memorabilia, yeah. But they have other things in there, the interviews and a few feature articles occasionally.
Where do you live then?
I'm in Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, I see. Well, I didn't recall exactly where you were.
When I was a boy, we lived in Klamath Falls, Oregon for a little while, out in your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
That's been a while, though.
Well, for me, I was born in Portland.
Yes, sir. I liked Oregon very much, but my stepfather never could find a job that he could stay with. He worked at the post office for a while, but it never was anything he could stick with, so we left there after about a year.
You'd have to be a logger or a sawmill savage.
That's about right. Yeah, that's all it was. This was back in the 50s, and that just wasn't much else around there then.
No, there wasn't.
Okay, I will ask you, I don't know, probably a dozen questions, and if you would please just answer as long or short as you want to, and if you want to add anything, please do, and if you don't want to answer something, just don't answer it. Okay?
You bet.
Are you, in the minor leagues, you were a third baseman.
Right.
When were you switched to be a pitcher?
1932.
What?
I started out 1930 as a third baseman.
Uh-huh.
And I just got to where I made more errors throwing than anything. And somebody decided I was to be a pitcher. Well, I belonged to San Francisco Seals at the time, and they wanted me to go back down to Arizona again. I had a pretty good year down there. I didn't want to go back because I was afraid the league would blow up, and it did.
Huh.
So I went home in Portland, and I was playing semi-pro ball around there, and I decided one day, hell, I'd like to give that pitching a try. And so that's how I started, and before the 32 summer was over, why I signed with Portland in the Pacific Coast League. And I went on from there, went to the, nothing great the next 2 years, or 32, 33, 34, I was going pretty good. And I went to the athletics, and old Connie, he sent me back, Connie Mack sent me back to Portland, and Earl Shealy was, just made a scout for the Red Sox, and I was in Cronin, and just went over there as manager, and I was the first ball player they bought. So that's how I got the big thing.
Well, that worked out pretty well for you and for Boston.
Yeah.
Your first game with Boston is kind of a legend. You hit a home run in the 11th inning to win it. I guess you remember that pretty well.
Yeah, that wasn't the first game I was in, but it was the first hit I got, the home run. And around here on Labor Day, we don't have nothing to do with the national anthem. I all sing "Take Me Out of the Ball Game," my kid. No, but I went into relief Westphal on the second inning. We were beat 9-2, I think it was. I went in and hung on there till the 11th inning, and Cronin hit a home run in the 8th inning, and with the bases full, we got tied. And I hit one in the center field bleachers in Boston. That's Billy Rogel with Detroit, and Jimmy Fox, Philadelphia, had hit him there, but I was the first one ever, the Red Sox, to hit one there. It was a pretty fair cast at that time.
Yes, it was.
That was my biggest thrill in baseball, and I remember that real well. I don't remember going around the bases, but I remember.
Got it for the days at that point. point. Who was it off of?
A fellow named Phil Heinrich, and he was in Chattanooga the next day.
That tells a story, I guess.
And old Eddie Collins, he was a general manager, and he gave me hell the next day for swinging at a bad pitch. It was funny, really.
I guess it is now. I probably wasn't then.
Yeah, I thought, hell, I went down to clubhouse and I told a couple of guys, goddamn Collins, he's giving me hell about swinging at a bad pitch. And they said, hell, don't pay no attention to him. But we had a lot of guys from the athletics over there, Grove, Wahlberg, Bishop. And then Fox come later, but we just about took the whole club, I guess.
Yeah, the athletics were on their way down very rapidly at that point.
He had to get rid of them. He just got two, getting rid of Dykes and Simmons and half to Chicago, and then there was Grove and Wahlberg and Max Bishop over to Boston, and later on White Fox and Markham and Kramer and Dib Williams and a whole bunch of them come over there.
And your teams always were pretty good hitting teams. Well, actually, excellent hitting teams. You were always a little thin in the pitching staff. Behind you and Grove there for a few years, it wasn't anything.
No, we didn't do much, and believe it or not, we couldn't beat the Yankees. My God, they talk about their 27 team and everything, but God, when they had Gomez and Ruffing and Chandler and Monty Pearson and Bump Hadley in that bunch, and they had, God knows, a better catcher than Bill Dickey. And, and I've said this before, that I don't know if Mickey Mantle would have made that club for one reason. Keller and DiMaggio and Heinrich were a great outfield, and I don't know where the hell he'd have played right there.
Without a designated hitter, it would have been awful hard, wouldn't it?
Yeah, in the infield, with Gehrig and Lazzari and Corsetti and Red Rolfe, they were pretty tough. Because you get the first two out or else you're in trouble. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. You're probably right. Man for man, they didn't have Ruth, but man for man, they matched up extremely well, and they had a better pitching staff than the 2017.
Yeah, so.
Well, you, for a number of years, started and relieved sort of interchangeably. Did you have a preference?
Oh, I like to start, but every time I'd start, I'd start and go nine innings, and hell, he ruined Cronin. I'll tell you this right now, Cronin ruined my career because I hurt my arm pitching today and tomorrow and the next day and then starting. Hell, it was nothing. Pitch nine innings a day and go down to the bullpen, go in and save one the next day.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't, talking about saves, they didn't count saves in those days.
Well, they've gone back and counted them. And you were third 1 year and fourth 1 year.
Yeah, in the league, was it?
Pardon me?
In the league?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, you were also second in games a couple of times, and the other guy that was ahead of you, and I don't remember who it was right now without looking back, only made a couple of starts, whereas you were making half of your appearances were starts.
Yeah.
It must have been tough on you. Elton Ocker told me that the worst year he ever had was the year he played for Cronin. He was not, not thrilled with Cronin as a manager of pitchers.
You better believe it. But nobody else was. He ruined more good young pitchers than anybody, I'm telling you. Butland and Rich and the big guy, Mickey Harris, he didn't help him any either.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Eldon come over there, and I don't know. Joe was a funny guy. See, he thought that nobody could have a sore arm because Walter Johnson never had a sore arm. And nobody could ever be hurt because Walter Johnson was never hurt. He had a home run in Philadelphia, and he was watching it go in the upper deck, and he turned his ankle on first base. And when he come in, I said, now go out there and fight him, Joe. God damn it. I said, you're not hurt. Nobody can be hurt. He went out there, but he walked in after about 10 minutes. It was bad.
That's funny. It's funny now, I guess. I'm sure it was very disheartening at the time.
Oh, he was a hunch player and everything else. He got us in a lot of trouble. Hell, he had his pitching staff. We had Grove and Newsom and myself pitch 3-game series against the Yankees. We were all gone after the first game. Had Grove out of there, and he put Newsom in, and he put me in to finish it, and I lost it in about the 15th inning, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, we didn't have nobody to pitch the next 2 games with any rest. Do some other crazy things. He'd send guys ahead to New York to pitch, and then he wouldn't pitch them the first day over there. He'd wait a day or two. Did that with Wahlberg and myself. Went over there the next day. We had to pitch a doubleheader in Yankee Stadium, and Christ, he pitched somebody else.
Well, he lasted a long time as a manager.
He lasted a long time as a manager because he sat on Yawkey's lap. That's why.
Was that it?
Crossed his legs. Break his back, but he... Well, I guess that's enough on him. You get the idea.
I do indeed. And you're not the first who said it, so, you know, I know it's a fact.
Yeah.
You had a... go back to your batting. You had another big day with the bat in 1940. Two home runs in one game.
Oh, yeah. That was in Chicago. I remember that real well. I got 3 grandsons, and they're all baseball nuts. They're all, well, one of them's out of college, and the other's getting out, and the other one's got a couple of years. He's on a baseball scholarship at Walla Community College now, 2 years. This is his second year. I tell him about that hit he missed. No, I hit one off Jack Knott. I hit that in the upper deck. Park.
Wow.
And the other one was off Pete Appleton. His name, original name was Jablonowski. He pitched with Cleveland and Washington before he went over to Chicago. But funny thing, Sheely was there that day. He just come in from the West Coast. They always used to bring scouts in then, you know, to take a look at who the hell they were scouting. Class of ball, one thing and another.
Sure.
They have an idea what they were looking for. And I was supposed to have dinner with him that night. We were real close friends. And I couldn't find him. I found out afterwards. He told a couple of them. He said, hell, he said, I was about to sit there and eat dinner and listen to him talk about his hit. That was the end of that.
Well, you were, those were the only 3 home runs you hit, but you were, I would say, I guess it goes back to your third base play, you were a good hitting pitcher.
Yeah, I hit pretty good. That didn't hit me too much, but I think I was looking up all these deals. One of my grandsons looked it up and said, I hit 199 for my career. I said, well, my God, that's more. Dave Valley's hitting now, anyway.
That sure is. It was 199, but you had 1 year of 313. You had 273 another year.
Yeah.
And about half the time, you were well up in the 200s. You were, in fact, it was your last season that you dropped below 200. You went 2-for-18, and that dropped you down to from like 205 to 199.
It was a sad year when I traded to Washington. That Cronin, I saw him in San Francisco. After the 41 season, I played golf with he and Ty Cobb and Tony Lazzeri. And I went down to see him on purpose, and because I knew that, you know, the newspapers were on me pretty bad. You go so far, and my arm wasn't so good, and I knew they were trying to trade. I asked him, I said, God damn it, do me a favor, don't trade me to St. Louis or Washington. So a newspaper man here named Holly Goodrich called me up one night in Portland in the wintertime and says, well, what do you think of it? I think of what? He says, do you know? And I said, no, what? He says, I even traded to Washington.
Oh, boy.
I couldn't believe it. I have the phone, and well, I actually cried. I tell you, that guy, once again, I know my wife had much use for him.
Well, fortunately...
So I didn't have much of a year in 42 at all.
You only washed in about half the year, though. I guess that's a salvage. At least you got out.
I'll tell you how close it was. They took Social Security out up to a certain point, up to, I forget what it was, and then you were through for the year, and I went to Detroit, and they took it out before I knew it, and I got the same amount there, so it was like half a year.
Was Detroit any better?
Pardon?
Was Detroit any better than Washington?
Oh, yeah. A lot better, but of course, they didn't, Greenberg was gone, and, they didn't have too much going for them right about that time, 42.
No, they were about halfway between pennants at that point.
Yeah.
Did you go into service after that?
No, I stayed home. I could have went to, Cleveland when, Del Baker was over there, but I didn't go back because my draft deal was up. And there was no sense in going back. I figured I would. Well, I registered in Somerville, Massachusetts when you had to register. And hell, by the time I was no airplane in those days, and by the time I'd get the mail and everything else, they would tell me to report Monday morning. Well, I'd get the letter on Friday or something.
Mm-hmm.
I'd write them a letter, tell them, and they'd reclassify it another time. So I finally went up, and they found out that I had arthritis or something. So the arthritis was my elbow. It wasn't arthritis at that time. It was chipped bones that were in there that I had checked out once before. And he never would tell me the results of the x-rays or anything else, so I never did know that until I went to the doctor here. Portland, right? I was in Portland at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't go into service at all. I played here in Portland after that.
How many more years did you play?
Oh, Bill Klepper, to make a deal with Jack Zeller. He knew him real well and told him to make a deal with him. Get me out here and I could pitch. The worst I could do would be to pitch when the team was home. And he wound up, I just went on and just waited for the draft call. I didn't get Furman or nothing.
But it never came?
No, they finally showed up. I finally went for a deal, but the fellow that operated on my arm was Dr. Kimberly, and I told him up there, I said, well, I didn't want to get that 4F stuff. And I said, I'd like to go see a doctor, some other doctor. I said, don't you have a doctor that you could send me to? And he said, yeah. And I said, the same one that operates on you is ours. And he sent a letter in and told him I had arthritis and what the operation had been. And the guy said, he said, well, then nobody will be calling you. He said, so you can do whatever you want.
Huh.
So, by that time, I was in 44, and by that time, there was nothing much doing.
So,
I went around, and then I managed for a couple of years.
Where did you manage?
Pardon?
Where did you manage?
At Salem in the Western International League.
Uh-huh.
I was on there for 2 years. Before that, I coached a year at Fort Wayne University. But...
what did you do when you left baseball?
I went to work for a beer company, Lucky Lager Brewery out here.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to work for a distributor up in Spokane, and I was there when I retired.
Have you enjoyed your life after baseball?
Named Cronin around.
No, you enjoyed it.
Oh, hell yeah.
Good. Would you have any regrets from your career other than Joe Cronin?
No. No, I really don't. I'd like to add some of the money these guys are getting.
Oh, yeah. Well, goodness gracious, a man that win 12, 15, 16 games a year nowadays, he's getting $2.5 million or more.
I would say.
Jeez.
Ill. But they went to, when I went to Washington, that old man Griffith, Christ, he got me $4,000. That was a lot of money then.
Oh, boy, yes, it was.
And so in Cronin, I went back to Boston, and Bucky Harris said, "Do you want to pitch the opener over there?" And I said, "Hell yeah, I'll pitch it." So I went over and I beat him 10-3, and I would have beat him 10-0, but the guy hit a swinging bunt down third baseline, and we had that. And his name was Estelaria. And he was Cuban, supposedly, but he was pretty black.
Yeah.
Didn't have nothing to do with it, I guess, but he threw it as far as he could in that right field corner. And there, and that's how they got the 3 runs. But going up the runway, somebody put their arm around me and says, "How are they going?" I said, "All right." And I turned around and looked at him, and I said, "Everything." And I said, "But that son of a bitch and father-in-law of yours." That was the end of everything. Because Bobby Doerr asked me several times, "How come that they never kept you or anything else?" When Ed Doherty, when he was the public relations man, then he went to service, and then Monty won, they give him a ball club at Scranton to run, and he asked me if I'd manage it, and I said, "Yeah." Called and told me that he had the job, and then he wrote me a letter and told me that Cronin was the general manager of the Red Sox, and said that I wasn't going to manage the ball club, and that was it.
Oh, boy.
Well, like Bobby Doerr asked me one day, and he was scouting for the Red Sox, and he was out over to Spokane when I was there, and I was talking to him. He says, "What in the hell ever happened?" He says, "All these donkeys get jobs around someplace." And he says, "All you did for him, why he didn't give you a job." And I told him, he says, "That's the reason." You're damn right it is. Tell him again.
Well, you got to speak your mind. You got to let him know how you feel.
Pardon?
You got to let him know how you feel. There's no reason not to.
Oh, hell yes. He felt better for doing it.
Sure. In your time, you mentioned the Yankees. There were a whole lot of good hitters around. Who was the best hitter or the best ball player that you think you saw?
Well, I didn't bum around personally with him, even when I could have, when he'd come to see Dom. But Joe, he was the best ball player. But the best hitter, there'll never be another one, is Williams.
Mm-hmm.
Because he, I'll tell you, he was just uncanny. Big John Rigney pitching for the White Sox. When he come up to the top one time, he come over and Ted popped the pitch up, and he says, "You know, he did something up the top there and took a little off." If he says that, he says, I'll nail the ball and hit the ball out of the park next time up." And he come back, he says, "He did it again." I never saw what the hell he did, but he must have known what he was talking about.
Well, I think you're right. I don't know if he was the hitter Cobb was. We'll never know, but anybody could pick those 1-2 and be pretty right, I think.
Yeah.
Who was the toughest hitter for you to pitch to? You didn't have to pitch to Williams you didn't have to pitch to Williams at all, I guess.
I got to pitch to him in that opening game over there.
Oh, yeah, sure. Right, okay.
I threw him a knuckleball just for meanness, and he hit that a screaming line drive to right field. Campbell caught it, Bruce Campbell, he'd come over to Washington from Detroit at that time. He said, "I don't know what the hell you threw him, but don't throw it anymore." Come out there, knuckleball. No, the guy that hit me better than anybody was a guy named Rip Radcliffe for the White Sox.
Yeah.
Yeah, he told me, he said, the last time we'd see him, he'd say, now, be real careful this winter, don't let nothing happen to you, so you're sure to be back. I'd say he hit feller good, too.
Well, Radcliffe was a good ball player.
You bet he was. He hit line drives all day long. They were the toughest ones for me.
Who was the best pitcher you saw in your time?
The best pitcher I ever saw was Satchel Paige. I saw him in 1933 down in Los Angeles at night. And we had all-star clubs. Out of the Coast League, and we had some good ball players. I mean, guys had been around, and he only pitched three innings, and he struck out the first two, and then Earl Shealy fouled out to the catcher, and he struck out the next three, or the next six. Kid about afterwards, he said, I must be a hell of a hitter. He said, I at least fouled one. For no, but he could just do anything with the ball. The kid that I used to always pitch against, Feller, he was a hell of a pitcher, too, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. He was just developing, I guess, when you were there, wasn't he?
Well, he'd come in now. I used to pitch against him all the time. I used to. They'd skip my turn in St. Louis and everything else, so I pitched against him. And I beat him more than he did me.
Oh, that's good. Now, I understand Grove, since he could choose his own spots, he chose to skip Feller.
Yeah, he didn't. He was a funny guy. He was a very bad disposition, Ellie. He went for a month there and wouldn't talk to anybody in the ball club, Ellie. He's like... Yawkey. Fox dropped the pop fly and they would have been the third out in Chicago and somebody got a base hit and they scored. And we went to the 12th inning and won. And against Ted Lyons. And the next morning my one old Tom Yawkey come down walking through the deal there, the lobby, and says, good morning, Mose, and he says, what the fuck's good about it? and he never talked to us. We went for a month, and when he wanted to talk to us, we got tongue-tied, too.
Yeah, well, that's only fair turnabout.
He had a very bad disposition. He was different than anybody I ever knew, by God, really. He could be as nice a guy as you ever want to see. He was a banker on the road. He enjoyed doing that. He'd go around with $700-$800 in his pocket. We wouldn't have to write checks. Every payday when we get home, he'd say, everybody knows me, pay me. We had some good pitchers. Wes Farrell was there. Of course, Wes lost his fastball.
He was about the end at that point, wasn't he?
Yeah. But in the spring, it was Grove and then Farrell and Ray, and that's like a spawn verdict deal, but at the same time, the two of them did all the pitching. It was a hell of a mess. It rained in Boston.
Yes.
I'll tell you that.
My wife's from there. We get up there a lot, and I don't like it up there, to be honest with you, but we do see a lot of the Boston weather.
I saw Joe Morgan when they were out here. Never met him. But he made the remark to somebody and he told me about it. Said that I was the best cold weather pitcher he'd ever seen, so I had to talk to him.
I guess so.
I went out the ballpark and God damn it, whether he wins or not or whether he's a great manager, he's a hell of a good guy to talk to, I'll tell you.
Looks like they're sitting pretty good this year.
Yeah, I hate to see him get beat last night. I'd like to see him win that.
I'll tell you, my wife's got three brothers that are all big Red Sox fans. I'm a Tigers fan myself. And I guess the Tigers have had it this year, but I sure do hear a lot about the Red Sox.
Yeah, well, the Tigers are down a little, but they went about as far as anybody can go when they talk about Sparky Anderson being a great manager and everything. Well, he might be, but those guys, they runs for it. God,
yes.
Fielder and guys that never hit anything started hitting for him. I'll tell you one thing, if you're a great Detroit fan, you got one guy you can watch from now on for a while. It's going to be that Fryman.
Yeah. He's from right here in Lexington. He's from right here in Lexington. He doesn't live here now, but he went to high school here in Lexington.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's boy, he looks like a good ball player.
Yeah. Is this Lexington, Kentucky now?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like to be around there to look at the horses. I could never rode a horse in my life, but I'd love to look at them.
Well, they're beautiful animals. That's what I do for a living. I'm a veterinarian, and I work only on horses. And right now, the horse business is in bad, bad, bad shape.
I've heard that. I read that some in the Sporting News and different things. Well, I guess Calumet Farms is in bad shape.
Well, that's, I guess, came as a surprise to everybody not associated with the horse business, but those of us that make our living from it knew it was coming. The guy that was running it, the son-in-law, it was...